One proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported JAZZ 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th of May, Anno Domini 2011, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things to choose, nothing to lose. Take off your shoes, relax, we're going to do this.
Today is Naked Gardening Day, if you didn't know.
Today is not a day I would be out in the garden naked, although it's kind of warmish and humid.
Yeah, I was mentioning before we got on the air here that we're definitely going to need some kind of a cooling system in here if it's this hot and muggy already.
We spent the early part of this week in Rockford, Illinois, picking up my favorite daughter from college. She was packing in 95-degree weather. It was amazing. It was amazing. But we got her home. It was like, it's supposed to be an 11.5-hour trip to door-to-door. The first trip, the first day was like 16 hours because we got caught. There was not only massive amounts of construction in Chicago, but there were also numerous accidents.
Yeah.
So when we came home, we skirted south of Chicago, which really didn't save us any time at all because not only did it add a couple of hours to our drive, but also everybody else did the same thing, and there were more accidents.
Probably less traffic now going through the city.
Yeah, and although we came home in 2 days, so the second day was only about a six-hour drive, so that was nice.
We did that once coming back from Toronto. You know, you take the 405 over to Queenston Bridge, and it was backed up all the way to the QEW. So we called the other car that we're traveling with. You know, this bridge is pretty backed up. You might want to try the other bridge. It was worse.
Wow.
And we never heard the end of it.
Yeah, I bet.
Although, fortunately, we had the guys in one car and the girls in the other car, so we had a few hours before we never heard the end of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right. All right. Microsoft announced on Tuesday that it would buy Skype Global for $8.5 billion in cash. That's billion with a B, its largest acquisition ever. In Skype, Microsoft is buying the leader in internet voice and video communications with 107 million users per month connected for more than 100 minutes a month on average. That large and active user base represents a major asset, Steve Ballmer said in an interview. It's an amazing customer imprint, Balder said, and Skype is a verb, as they say. Of course, so is Google, and he doesn't want to mention that. Buying Skype, analysts say, gives Microsoft the upper hand in the fast-growing market for internet communications, both for consumers and businesses. Google is way behind Skype, and getting ahead of Google in this market was certainly an incentive for Microsoft. Ballmer emphasized that Microsoft plans to expand Skype's business and inject its voice and video technology across the spectrum of Microsoft products, from customer offerings like Xbox to its office productivity software. Despite its popularity, the service has struggled to maintain profitability. Since most of its services are free, Skype makes much of its income from a small group of users who pay for long-distance calls to telephone numbers. Microsoft's deal-making history is mixed. The company has often been a smart acquirer of startups and smaller companies, analysts say, picking off technical teams that are then folded into products like Windows, Office, and Internet Explorer, none of which Microsoft created but bought. But during Ballmer's tenure as chief executive, the company has also made far larger, riskier bids, most of which have been viewed as unsuccessful. The Microsoft deal ends the speculation about the future of Skype. The company had been planning an initial public offering, but delayed its debut last year, prompting talk that it would be sold to a company like Facebook, Google, or Cisco Systems. The boards of both companies have approved the deal. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is Microsoft bought Skype. And the choices are, well, there goes free video calls. Well, there's a waste of $8.5 billion. Don't care I love FaceTime. Don't care I love Tango. And don't care I have no friends. And, of course, once you are done with that particular choice, I know you'll have more to say because I know you. So all you have to do is check the little yellow box underneath the poll and click on that. It will take you to the question of the week The opinion question of the week, which is how do you feel about Microsoft buying Skype? And then come on back and join us here on the air as we talk to Bob from Rush, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Oh, yes. Well, I love listening to you guys, but here in Rush, 90.1 reception is awful. So I depend on the internet.
Okay.
And your feed. But, and I can't be around the computer all the time.
Sure.
And other people use my computer, namely my wife. She likes to tie it up. So I was just tickled pink when you talked about Total Recorder a couple of weeks ago. And I immediately went out and bought it. And I tried it. It worked great.
Love to hear that.
But
it's fantastic.
Then I decided, well, I'm going to try to use the scheduling facility. Okay, so last week I tried the scheduling facility, and everything worked fine, right down to getting your click here to listen live via high speed. And that's where my screen stood. See, I have to click on that entry, and then it asks me the file name to download, and then I have to start up Windows Media Player, okay, to start playing it. And I'm trying to figure out how to get around that.
Easy, Bob. All you have to do is go to our website.
Yes.
And well, every week we have the previous week's show up there that you can download.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, we already do the recording for you, and you can download that recording. But I'm sure there's a way to do schedule the recording yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, the file name you're looking for, the file name you can put into Total Recorder to have it record.
Yes.
Is, and you might want to write this down. I suppose Steve can put it in the thing, but if you click on it, it'll just start playing.
So instead of going to the web page and needing to click a link, you can actually put that link into Total Recorder.
Okay. Right. Oh,
and the link is, of course, http://.
Right.
Jazz901.
Right.
Dot servemp3. Servemp3.
Okay.
Dot com.
Servemp3. Oh, okay.
So it's .com.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait. That's you're doing a high bandwidth or low bandwidth?
I don't know.
Yeah, you're doing a low bandwidth for smartphone at servemp3.
Am I?
The high bandwidth, jazz901.org/assets/streams/jazz901stream.mp.m3u.
Really?
No. Well, okay, now that's an M3U playlist. Okay. Nick is doing the MP3 file. I wonder which one. So the M3U playlist would open Winamp or iTunes to actually play it. And this one is an actual MP3 file, so that may be the one that would work better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, ignore everything I just said.
Okay, so I'll start again.
Okay, start, okay.
It's http://.
Right.
Jazz901.
Correct.
Dot servemp3, servemp3.
Yes.
Dot com.
Right.
Colon,
okay.
80.
Okay.
Slash, almost done.
Okay.
WGMC.mp3.
WGMC.mp3.
So let me do it again.
Yeah, no, that's fine, because I am recording you right now.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, so, I can, quickly get that link. Give it a try.
It won't play on my computer.
Bob, one of the other things is you can have multiple incidences of your browser going.
Right.
So you could, say your wife wants to get on there and just do some other stuff. Well, what you can do is you could have your browser minimize that one with Soundbite Streaming. She can jump on, open another browser,
right,
and just do her stuff, and you can still hear the program.
Yeah. No, that's fine. But
wait a minute. Hold on. You're right. That did not play for me.
It opens a player, and when I hit play, nothing happens.
Okay.
When did that happen? Because I'm recording it every week.
You're recording the M3U stream? Or the MP3 file.
I apparently don't know which I'm recording.
Because the other address that I gave, the jazz901.org/assets/streams/jazz901stream.m3u, is a playlist file that then Winamp or iTunes or Media Player will open and play the stream from.
Okay.
So okay. One of those two links actually, should work.
But you actually have to go to Media Player to start it.
Yes, some program has to play that audio file.
It has to play that audio file.
Right. Now, there may be a better program to use. On the Mac, there's one called Radio Shift, which is specifically designed to record internet radio. So you put in the internet address, and it starts playing it for you.
Okay. Well, I'm not a Mac guy, so...
There may be something similar for Windows.
For Windows. Okay. Okay, but anyhow, that first information you gave me... getting, you know, the previous week's recording off of your website. That sounds like the best deal for me. Because that way I don't have to be, you know, near a computer. And Saturday between 12 and 2, it's kind of tough to sit on a computer, particularly when the weather's nice.
Right.
I usually have it up Saturday afternoon, sometimes Sunday afternoon, depending on my schedule.
That sounds great. That's a great way to get your feed. That way I can listen to it anytime during the week. That's great.
Yep.
But anyhow... the Total Recorder, I have nothing but good things to say about it because I can use it for a lot of other stuff.
I have been using it, over 10 years, Nick, when you recommended it to me?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, I go back to the old days of it, and I simply love that program. Because here's the other thing that you can do with it, and for the folks out there, you know, say you're trying to load up your MP3 player.
Okay.
And it's only got so much storage.
Right.
With Total Recorder, you know, because they do a lot of these musics and songs are in big fidelity, you know, I mean, they're big files.
Right.
And, you know, if you're listening them onto an MP3 player, it's not like you're listening on to some fantastic stereo system.
Right.
So what you can do is in there, you can sort of dumb them down is the best way to do it. The quality is just, you know, not as terrific. I mean, you can still understand the songs and everything else, but it reduces the size. You might not hear all the other stuff that you would hear in high fidelity.
Okay.
And especially a talk show.
You
can take that down to nothing.
Right. Quality doesn't really matter there.
But for the folks that are putting on songs, you know, and just going out jogging, they just want to listen to music, by shrinking them in one of the tools in there, you can shrink them and get more songs on your MP3 player that you can enjoy while you're out, you know, exercising and doing whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's got a lot of features. And I only bought the sound part of it, but I'm thinking they have a video extension also, and I'm thinking of getting that too because I do a lot of stuff with video.
We also stream video of the show as well, so you can watch the show while you're listening to it.
Okay, and that's on your website also.
Yep.
Okay.
But like I say, you know, this is one product that's been around. Like I say, Nick recommended it at least over 10 years ago to me. And I have been a faithful, I immediately went right in, signed up for it, because it was just a great product.
Oh, yeah, it was. I went right out and, you know, they recommend that you download the trial version, and I figured, oh, heck, it wasn't that expensive. So I just downloaded and bought it right off the bat.
Yep.
Because their download, their trial version, actually, every minute they introduce a beep or, you know, some sort of interference. So, you know, they explained all that on their website, but I just went out and bought it, and it's a very good product.
Yep. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yes, and thank you very much for the information, so I can enjoy your show every week.
Thank you.
That's what we like to hear.
Hey, you got to do us one favor, though.
What's that?
Tell at least two other folks about the show.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I am fine.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
I'm playing the stream.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, and it's playing just fine. So,
all right, so maybe it doesn't like Chrome. No, you're using Chrome.
I'm using MPlayer.
Ah, let me try something else on that stream.
Yeah, but at any rate, that works.
So you folks that can see us on the stream, you're seeing both Nick and Steve trying to play and get the show going as we are doing the show.
That's right. Now that's right, because I'm playing the show inside the show. I could put the microphone on it and start some kind of feedback. I don't know what we'd get, but I don't know that I would like it.
Definitely not me.
Yeah, I don't know. That's very weird. It's the folks at Jazz 90.1, jazz901.org, actually have a listen live button where you can actually listen to the show via the high-speed stream, or listen to it on your smartphone or listen to it in low bandwidth. So you can pretty much get whatever you need.
Yep.
But
just go to jazz901.org and click on listen here. And, you know, you can listen to us live. And if you go to the Soundbites page, we got the same thing. That's soundbites.org. That's soundbites.org. And we have both the link to see us. If you really want a good laugh, you can see us live here in the studio or just stream us. Either way, you know, you can learn a lot that we've been doing now. We're coming up close to 22 years. I mean, Memorial Day is only a couple weeks away. Before you know it, we're going to be at 4th of July, and we're going to be starting our 22nd year.
That's amazing to me. That's amazing to me. I don't even like you guys, and I've been around you for 22 years.
Well, the feeling's mutual.
That's exactly right.
Nothing but love.
That's right. Nothing but.
Nothing
it's,
but love.
It's been a great time, and we want to thank all of you because the reality is this show would never have lasted 22 years, 22 minutes without you folks coming in and helping us out and watching and listening every week and coming in.
And Rob taking a chance on us.
Rob took the chance on us, brought us here. You folks have come through. Again, we want to thank all those of you who became members of the family during the last pledge drive. We can't begin to tell you how honored and proud and humbled we are that you would do that.
You know what? It's in 3 weeks. We start our second year here. It'll be June 4th. We actually started on June 5th, 2009. And now we're coming up on our second year as of June 4th. So, you know, I mean, that was a big step for Rob to take. This is the only talk show on this station.
Yep.
I mean, everything else is music. So think about this, folks. I mean, here's somebody that's, you know, station manager and goes to him and says, you know, I want to bring in a talk show.
You're right. And it's about computers, oh, by the way. So it's he was kind of gutsy to do that, and we're delighted and thrilled that he did it. So, but we're going to take a break now just to wipe the tears out of our eyes, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. And right here, along with all the members of the Jazz 90.1 family on Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Steve and I were discussing during the break about Skype being bought by Microsoft, and we don't know a lot of the details. We don't know if they got, because when Steve was saying, go ahead. When
the original guys sold Skype to eBay, the idea was that eBay would let you audio video chat with buyers and sellers. And it turns out nobody wanted to do that. That's why we're buying things on the internet. We don't want to talk to anybody. But
that's true.
When they made that original sale, they kept the core technology to themselves, which apparently eBay missed. You know, because you don't buy a company for the name. Buy it for the technology. So now we're wondering if Microsoft got that core technology or if they just bought the name again.
Yeah, I don't know that Microsoft would make that mistake. And more importantly, they want the patents so that they can turn around and sue everybody else.
One thing Ballmer did say is that they will continue to support and develop Skype for non-Microsoft platforms, meaning Mac and Android and iOS.
Yeah, right.
And everybody else. And actually, Microsoft does have a pretty big Mac development core for Microsoft Office for Mac. And from what we can tell, they don't talk to the Windows people at all because the feature sets aren't really that close between the two programs. So we never know. Yeah, and they're on different release schedules than the Windows counterparts. At least the file formats are the same. Although now in Office 2011 for Mac, we have the ribbon everybody hates.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Clippy's back. Did you see that?
No.
Yes. Microsoft has a game for learning how to use Microsoft Office, And Clippy is the game's mascot.
Okay, I give him props for that. Absolutely give him props for that. That works for me.
I still remember some trade show. Probably the Office, the 2003 rollout when they introduced Clippy. Some poor guy dressed up in a giant Clippy costume walking around the trade show.
And people with baseball bats.
Yeah. Poor Clippy.
Poor Clippy.
And then when they retired Clippy, they had a funeral for Clippy.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
But he's not dead yet.
I'm feeling much better.
Because he's back in the game. All right, our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Good morning. I may have more than one, but let's start out. I use a package called Radio Shark to record.
Sure.
In fact, I normally be recording your show this morning right at this time. Mm-hmm. And I run into a difficulty with a loud background hum. Not knowing for sure what was causing that, I tried to adjust the antenna position.
Yeah, they hum when they don't know the words.
They do? Well, that may explain it. What are the words?
I don't know them either. That's why I hum.
Yeah, Radio Shark is a neat product. It's a standalone radio that you plug into your computer.
Yeah, and the radio looks like a fin.
A shark fin, yeah.
Yep, you've described it well.
And now, you don't have... This is a new problem, but you've had the Radio Shark for a while.
I've had the Shark for several years, and I will say that I think the problem kind of comes and goes. I haven't bothered to record the exact time or keep a log on it.
Usually what we hear in the audio world, you know, it's the 60 hertz hum, and it's a ground loop fault. Something in your setup isn't grounded properly, and so the 60 hertz electricity sine wave is leaking into the audio. Now, I can hear that right now in my headphones, and I've tried grounding my computer. I've tried ungrounding my computer. I've been buying choke coils to put on my audio cable, but none of them fit. I keep having to go back and find. For some reason, I can't remember to bring my cable with me when I go to Radio Shack to buy the choke coil. And then I bought one and can't find it now to try it.
Right.
But, Steve, does it come and go, or once you fix it, it's pretty well fixed?
Well, it's almost always there. Sometimes you don't hear it because the source, you know, if you're playing music or something, it's underneath and you can't really hear it. You only hear it when it's quiet. But once you fix it, it can come back if you change a piece of equipment or, you know, something changes in the electrical system that you can end up getting it unground again.
It also may not necessarily be anything in your equipment because you're pulling the signal over the radio.
Yes.
So over the air. So it could be that it's something else, for example, a microwave, a hairdryer, a television, the refrigerator, compressor motor. It could be, that's the problem with radio. It could be anything because all of those are essentially radio transmitters.
Yes, I can relate to those, and I think I've gone through enough of a cycle here to pretty well rule those out. But anyway, so this morning they decided to power down my computer. I have a tower desktop, and powered it all the way down. And now I've got a problem, which it won't come back up. I turn the power on, and it says it does not find any addition of Windows on the computer.
Is this Radio Shark a USB product?
Yes.
That's the way I use it, yes.
Unplug it.
Okay.
What's likely happening, it actually happened to me at work, I thought I was going to have a coronary. What actually sometimes happens is, and you want to look in your BIOS to fix this, you can set any device to be the first device that boots. And if you have set the USB device... As I did at work to test something and then forgot to set it back.
You want to boot a flash drive to run a diagnostic or something,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It then looks for something on the boot drive, on the USB drive. And in my particular case, of course, I had left a regular thumb drive in by that point, and there was nothing on that. So the first thing to do is to unplug every USB device.
Because it's trying to boot the Radio Shark and can't find an operating system.
Right.
So the error message is completely correct and totally useless.
You're making a very good point here, and while you're talking, I've just got it restarted again. In fact, I had that same experience when I realized that I can't leave my MP3 plugged in when I reboot.
Yeah. So if you go into your BIOS,
unplugging the Radio Shark, but I've just done that.
Yeah. If you go into your BIOS, you can lower the priority of the USB boot and have it boot your hard drive first.
So we'll save that for another time, although I would have thought the hard drive was the highest priority. But
Well, and I would have thought that on my machine, too, but apparently it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I will sometimes put my CD to be the higher priority because if I put a CD in the drive, I want to boot from it because it's a diagnostic disk.
Sure.
Used to be the floppy drive you would do that. But then you get so many service calls about, you know, my computer says non-system disk. What should I do?
Okay.
Eject your floppy disk.
Yeah. Well, I had one like that. I told the story just a few weeks ago. The guy was complaining because, you fixed my machine. And I go, yeah, I did. And, you know, I had to go out there and boot it up. Sure, he was getting that message. And I looked down, popped out the floppy, hit the restart.
Yep.
All of a sudden, it booted.
Yep.
Ooh. The other issue this can be is a weak or dead CMOS battery. So the computer has forgotten which drive to boot from.
Okay.
So it picks the wrong one.
Okay.
And so checking your BIOS to make sure your hard drive is top priority is the usual fix for that. And then you can open your computer up and check the voltage on the battery. It's usually a little coin-type wafer battery, almost always a CR2032 at, what is that, 1.5 volts?
Yep.
I've seen it. I haven't paid much attention to it, but I know what you're speaking of. Now, you guys are overloading me here, but let me add one more chapter.
Very quick. Cool.
Given where I had been, and it's now in the process of loading files, et cetera, right now, but it worked itself up to ask me to put a version, a CD in for Windows XP Home, which I have, and I put it in, and it said that it either couldn't read it or I didn't have a proper copy. So it was rejecting that that disk, which I've used many times and, in fact, would have been the initial load for this computer.
And you're sure it was looking at the CD drive?
Well, I say that. I'm a little reluctant to say that right now because...
pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that doesn't get it.
Check the physical discs for any scratches or scuffs that you can sometimes buff out. But it also could be the optical drive itself. They can wear out. You can get dust or dirt on the lens, especially if you have pets.
Or are a smoker.
Or a smoker, and that can prevent the optical drive from working. You can get cleaning kits, although most of the cleaning kits assume a tray-loading drive, and they have it's a CD with a little brush on it that then brushes the lens. And I haven't had much luck finding one that works in slot-loading drives that so many computers have these days.
So many Macs have
these. Okay. Well, I have
a lot of the PCs, laptops.
When I first called you, and it says, please insert one of the following... because it is not a valid CD that I am now trying to read.
Hmm.
So anyway.
But the system itself booted up.
Yeah, and I guess the final restore possibility is that your hard drive has actually failed and it can't boot the system from it.
Now wait. These may be two separate problems. Did your system boot up by itself?
Well, it booted up to the point where it asked me to put in an operating system CD. It's not booting up off from the hard drive.
See, so it's you're still getting that invalid system disk.
Yeah, you know, remember there was that glitch where a lot of folks were saying, "Oh, wait a minute, your Windows isn't valid," and there was a correction for that.
Well, that usually happens after Windows boots and before you get to the desktop.
Yeah.
But Windows has actually started to boot.
It sounds like you may, in fact, well have a dying hard disk or a rootkit or whatever.
Have a rootkit.
But you're going to have to take it to somebody and have them actually check it.
Okay, I'll take care of that. Thank you very much for your generous time.
Thanks. Tell a friend.
Bye.
I found some interesting examples. In Europe, we have the 50 hertz hums, which is slightly different than the 60 hertz hum.
Thank you for sharing those.
The 60 hertz hum is halfway between an A sharp and a B, which is two octaves above middle C.
Right. Okay.
Sometimes Wikipedia is dangerous.
We're going to...
Ernesto? That's what I get.
Ernesto or Ernesto?
Ernesto.
Welcome, Ernesto.
Hi, guys. Listen.
Is it Ernesto or Ernesto?
Ernesto. Ernest with an O.
No, this is the front part I don't understand.
Ernest.
Ernesto. It is an E, okay.
Ernesto.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's not what Dave wrote down.
Well, whatever.
Hey.
Yep.
Wait a minute. At least
he is the oldest one here.
Quick question.
Sure.
Yeah, listen, I got a 3-terabyte drive, and I wanted to format it in Windows, but it only, and install a system, it only goes up to 2 terabytes on the, what's it, the master boot record thing.
Right.
And I researched that with Seagate, and they suggested to try to get to format the drive with a GPT, I forget the format.
Yeah.
And then go to use that utility disk part, I think it's called, in Windows. But you had to check to see if the motherboard supports a UFEI.
There's a lot. What you're trying to do is slap it together with duct tape and baling wire.
Yeah. Well. So Microsoft, just tell me, you can't do it.
Well, basically, right. You can, but you shouldn't.
Right.
Is what we're really saying.
Yeah, because
too many programs won't understand the baling wire and the duct tape.
Right. That's why it's better just to say partition it in 2 gig and 1 gig.
Yeah.
Okay. So
2 terabyte and 1 terabyte.
Put the operating system on one terabyte or
here's
like that.
here's what I would suggest you do, and this is what I tell a lot of clients. All right, we're talking terabytes here now.
Yeah, right.
I got a cheap deal on it. So
well, no,
it's good.
No, I'm not questioning it. I'm thinking back to the 5 meg hard cards I used to install. Now we're talking about terabytes. But what I would recommend, and I tell my clients to do this too, is you go ahead and partition it, the 2 terabyte and the 1 terabyte. So you load all the programs on the 2 terabyte. Now, when it comes up to setting up, say, Windows or any of these other things that you're going to be saving documents, point it to the other 1 terabyte. Now, so all your data and pictures and everything else are going to be stored in that 1 terabyte. This makes life simple. Because now if you get an external hard drive and say you want to do a backup, all you have to do is point it to say that 1 terabyte is, say, your D drive. All you have to do is in the setup, tell it to copy everything off the D. You don't have to tell it specific folders because everything on the D is going to be your pictures, your documents, anything that you really want to save. And it can just point it to there and say backup everything on there. Even if I added another folder, say, just this week, it doesn't matter. It's going to back up the whole terabyte hard drive to, say, another external terabyte hard drive.
Now, I completely agree with what David said, except that I would make the 1 terabyte drive the boot drive and the 2 terabyte drive the data drive.
So Windows and apps are on the smaller drive, the 1 terabyte drive.
The only thing I worry about is because of Windows, Microsoft Office, and some of these other programs, they like to add on so much other, say, clip art and all this other stuff.
Right.
Yeah, even so, 1 terabyte is way more than you'll need.
Yeah, so just when I'm doing the install, just cut it down to 1 terabyte, install the operating system there.
Yeah, and then the 2 terabyte drive would be for data. So
okay.
Then you have to go into your programs, like Office, and say, my documents are on D.
Right.
But once you've set all that, it'll be automatic from then on.
Yeah, the core problem is that the Microsoft's no, it wasn't Microsoft. Who wrote Master Boot Record?
Yeah.
One of the hard drive companies, probably.
Winchester. Seagate,
yeah. One of the Master Boot Record that all the hard drives are formatted as only supports a 2 terabyte drive.
Right.
So this newer formatting, GPT, breaks that limit and has its own limit. But then not everything's compatible with it.
Oh, I see.
Microsoft's backward. Apple switched to it 5 years ago.
Right.
Ahead of the curve.
Right. And they had their problems at the beginning, too.
Yeah.
Listen, we got to take a break. Thanks for calling, Ernesto. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. No, we're listening for a minute. All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite.
Keep that going, because I think the first line is, you might as well jump, which is the name of the song.
I doubt that it's got a first line.
No, I get up.
That's where it fades.
Yeah. I get up. The first line was I get up.
I mean, no, he's put some good music in there. I got to learn how to.
Archandra also thinks it's Jump. He's in the IRC chat right now.
Yeah. I got to learn how to put some other music in there.
Yeah, I bet you do.
I mean, there's some other tunes I wouldn't mind loading up in there. I just got to learn how to do it. I mean, I'm slowly getting there. I mean, yes, as I do, in case folks don't know, I do a Thursday night show. I'm on Thursday nights from 6 to 9, and I encourage all our listeners. Matter of fact, I've been telling folks about the sound bites, how I am one-third of sound bites. So you folks on Thursday nights that do listen to jazz, I've been telling them to come on over to the Saturday show and listen if you got computer questions and that type of stuff. But on Thursday nights, I'm kind of doing a shameless plug, which I should have done last hour. That's kind of doing it now. So I'm doing Thursday nights, and, you know, I encourage folks, if you
can. Last hour would have been in the middle of the poker show.
No, I'm talking about, I was supposed to do it just before we went into the break. So, yeah, if you can, tune in Thursday nights. I encourage folks. There's a lot of folks out there, in our listeners, that are jazz fanatics, and I'm turning into one. But you know what? I need your help. I've only been at this doing Thursday nights for maybe, about 2 months, two and a half months. And I just got into jazz last year really deep, thanks to Rob and Laurel Lamp, because of them bringing us here. So I'm learning, and I love folks to call in and suggest other artists to play. Because Rob lets me turns me loose and says, go ahead, if your listeners want to listen to stuff, because it is their station. See, that's what I'm getting to. Jazz 90.1 is a member-supported program, and it's you folks that keep us on. So that's why I really highly encourage folks every Thursday night, give me a call. I'll play what you folks want to hear. If it's in the library, and most of the time it is, and you're the experts, I'd love to learn along with you. So I encourage you to email me. You can go to dave@jazz901.org and email me. I gladly take your request there. You can call into the show on Thursday nights or text us, as you can text us right now here on the Soundbites program at 585-209-9010. If you're out in the car and you're listening and don't want to be on the phone, you can text us with your question and we'll get it answered. So we got three different ways to do it. And please give us a listen. Give me a listen on Thursday nights. Really would appreciate it. And one last thing I got to put out a shout to is the lovely ladies over at the Radio Oncology Lab over at Strong. You know, there's a couple ladies there. When I walked in, one of them goes, "That voice sounds familiar." She goes, "Keep talking." And I was talking with her. She goes, "I've heard you before." And I says, "Maybe sound bites?" "That's it!" She's so excited. She goes, "Yes, my husband listened and got me hooked on it. So now we go wherever we go, we got to listen to your show. You guys are a hoot." And she was telling the other technician about the Uncle Dave stories and all that.
Sure.
So, yes, we got a bunch of new folks over at the Radio Oncology Lab at Strong Hospital that are now listeners, and a shout goes out to those folks, and welcome to the family. They became members. They became members.
Nice. That's what we like to hear.
Yeah.
I told you last time I was in the hospital, some doctor comes rushing in. Is there a Nick Francesco in this room? Yeah, that's me, Doc. Oh, that's great. I've always wanted to meet you. Listen, I got a computer question. Look, Doc, you may not have noticed it, but I'm actually in the middle of a colonoscopy.
Get out. Really?
Oh, absolutely. I'm in the middle of it. I was doing that much, frankly.
Yeah, but still, no.
Yeah, I'm in the middle
of it. I may have wanted a second opinion, but yours.
Yeah. I'm in the middle of it. In the meantime, of course, yeah, I'm in a colonoscopy, so I'm coked to the gills. I don't even know what I'm saying or what I'm thinking or what I'm doing. And meanwhile, the doctor, I looked back over my shoulder, and the doctor who's doing the colonoscopy, he's got this look on his face with an expression that I can't say what he's thinking on the air. And if this guy who comes in looks around, he goes, "Oh, I'll come back later."
You think?
You think? Wasn't that the day you were getting the colonoscopy and the endoscopy at the same time?
No, that was my daughter.
So they could meet in the middle?
Yeah, that was my daughter. She had that went back when she was very sick. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Doc.
Yeah.
I mean, he walked into the room where they do that. There were all these people around there, and the guy with the machine.
Somewhere there was a giant whiteboard that said Nick Francesco, colonoscopy.
Exactly. And he read the first part.
Well, he could get your attention.
I was a captive audience, believe
me. That actually surprised me.
Was anchored to the table.
They still use those giant whiteboards like you see on TV.
Yes, they do.
They haven't computerized yet.
And the camera they used, by the way, had to be about that big. But let's not go there now. Let's talk about Facebook. I hope you're all sitting down.
You might need your colonoscopy.
You might need it. A security vulnerability on Facebook that's been there for years gave advertisers and other third parties a way to access users' accounts and personal information, according to security firm Symantec Corporation. But Facebook said Tuesday it had miraculously fixed the problem and found no evidence of the issue resulting in private information being leaked. God bless Facebook. The issue, which Symantec described as accidental, centers on Facebook applications, the third-party programs that allow users to play games, shop, and do other tasks on the Facebook website. In some cases, those applications shared with advertisers and analytics companies so-called access tokens, which act like spare keys originally intended for the apps to access or post information on a user's account, including reading wall posts, accessing a friend's profile, posting to a user's wall, and, wait for it, mining personal information. As of April, Symantec estimated that the flaw affected close to 100,000 Facebook apps and that potentially hundreds of thousands of applications may have inadvertently leaked millions of access tokens to third parties. Symantec informed Facebook of the problem in the second week of April, and the social network took steps to address it once somebody else knew about it. We've conducted a thorough investigation which reveals no evidence of this issue resulting in a user's private information being shared with unauthorized third parties, said a Facebook spokes robot in a in an email, without specifying how the company conducted its study. She also said contractual obligations with advertisers and developers prohibit them from obtaining or sharing user information in ways that violate Facebook's policies. Whew, I feel better already. She also said the company has strong policy enforcement and technical measures that allow us to quickly catch and take action against suspicious behavior on the platform for certain select values of quickly, which in this case span years. Last fall, Facebook punished several app developers for passing along identifiable user information to ad companies after a Wall Street Journal investigation found that many apps were sharing such data. So, as long as somebody else finds the problem for them, Facebook will fix the error, apparently. Are you still on Facebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook.
I'm on there. Matter of fact, a friend of mine, he goes, well, don't you do a lot on Facebook? I go, not really. I got a sister, God love her. I think she lives on Facebook. I got a couple of our mutual friends, it seems like are on there all the time. I just don't have the time. Quite often I'm doing other stuff. And yes, here's the other thing. And folks say, well, I see that, you know, you're online. Yeah, when I have my browser open, because I use both Chrome and I use Firefox, I can have, just on Firefox alone, anywhere from 25 to 30 tabs open. That's just the way my life is because, you know, and I have Facebook as one of them because I do go there from the sure. Jazz to check emails. But I've got so many vendors and anything else that I'm checking on stuff that I can have open at one given time.
You got to uncheck that keep me logged in on the Facebook webpage.
Uh-huh.
Then it keeps you logged in. So whenever you're on any website, Facebook is logged in and people know you're there.
Oh, see, I haven't even taken the time to do that. I'm there, and yes, I'll check it, but I don't check it. You know, I'll check it maybe once a day if I'm lucky, but I don't live there.
Yeah, nor do I. I will go on to see if my daughter is there, and I can chit-chat with her.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go down to keep up with two or three friends that are important to me. Other than that, I'm not on it, and I don't care.
Oh, one other thing. I got to put a nice plug out there for our thing, which I'll get back to in 1 minute.
Sure.
I got to answer the phone.
And folks, 99% of everything you read on Facebook is a scam. when somebody sends you this, oh, you know, here's this great thing, here's this terrific business, here's this yada, yada, yada.
Or X company is going to give you money for reading ads. Or
a free iPad for taking a poll or any of that other horse manure. The reality is they are not in any way, shape, or form real. They are scams, and if you fall for it, they're going to start asking for your personal information. And if you
even if they
them,
have testimonials.
Yeah, the testimonials are all fake,
This
too.
Is a paid actor.
One of the things I get...
Here we go. Congratulations. I just won an Apple 32-gig iPad.
Oh, lucky you.
Little dog.
Well, I'm Googling Facebook scam.
Yeah, right.
Actually, the proxy server is so sensitive here. You can't get to Facebook, which I understand. You can't get to any URL that has Facebook in it. So an article on Ars Technica about Facebook,
yeah,
I can't go to because there's Facebook in the URL.
Right.
But it popped up a scam.
Hey, I could forward Chrome from one of my other machines and surf that way.
There you go.
All right. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
A question about how to save sound files and what format to save them in. I've got a... my kids got me an iPod Nano this Christmas, and... so I started, I've got iTunes on a computer, and I started ripping where you're taking a CD and making a copy of it onto your computer, and then putting it on my iPod. But I was wondering if I should be saving, essentially archiving my music in a different way than MP3.
Yes, is the short answer.
Okay.
Well, MP3 is the most common format, but it's far from the best format.
Right, the sound quality is...
Right, it's a lossless format, so it throws away information that most people won't miss.
No, it's a lossy format.
I'm sorry, yes, lossy format.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it made files about a tenth of the original size, and so that's what made MP3 players so popular. Is now, instead of fitting one song on the early 32 meg MP3 players, you could fit 10. There's a newer format that iTunes and many other programs use called AAC, which is the Advanced Audio Codec, and that gives better quality than MP3 while still maintaining about that 10-to-1 compression. The true audio files will always use AIF, the audio interchange format.
Okay.
And that is a
lossless,
and that's the format that the CDs are written in to begin with.
Okay.
And so it's a typical AIF file is about 10 megs a minute.
Yeah.
And an MP3 file is 1 meg a minute.
Okay, so that's where you get a typical CD is 600 or 700 megs.
Right. There are some intermediary formats. Apple has one called Apple Lossless, which iTunes supports, that gives you a 50% file compression with no loss in quality. Because the big thing with ripping into AIF is that it's huge file sizes and it eats up your hard drive too fast.
Sure.
There's also something called FLAC, the free lossless audio compressor.
Okay.
But not many media players can play FLAC. So that's typically...
There's also OGG.
OGG, yep.
Theora.
Is it Vorbis or Theoris?
Vorbis
is video. Theoris is audio. So it often depends on which media player you have as to what formats they support.
Sure.
So you can sync them in your computer.
Okay.
If you have an iPod, your best choices, if you want to listen to a lot of music, it's MP3.
Yep.
Or AAC.
But if you want to listen to a lot of music that's higher quality, AAC.
AAC, yep.
Okay.
And then if you care about the quality, consider yourself an audiophile, then you might want to go for Apple Lossless, which gives you the best compression. It's also the type of music. We see a lot of times that things like classical and even jazz don't compress very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that the MP3 compression does is it throws away the high ends.
Right.
So you get really big booming bass, but you may not get a very good high end out of it.
Okay.
And those are preferences inside of iTunes you can set when you're ripping the CD. The default is AAC, which creates a file name called M4P. Yes.
Okay.
No, M4P is protected audio. M4A is standard audio.
Okay. Now, So I've got it.
We have got to go, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Right. It's the end of the hour. I'm sorry, Bill.
Oh, that's okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
My pleasure. We want to thank all of you. It's the end of the first hour. We will be back for a whole nother hour. Whether you like it or not, you've wasted an hour of your life, and there's another chance to waste another hour coming up. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, right here with all of the other members of the family at member-supported Jazz 90.1. So stay tuned, and we'll be back just really before you know it. Bring me something from the refrigerator.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, I have a correction to make. The folks in the Soundbites IRC chat, normally they pay absolutely no attention to what we're talking about here. We're talking about something else entirely.
Once
so
in a
I
while.
I don't read it because I can't keep track of that many conversations at once because I'm old. But I knew that talking about Vorbis and Theora and the OGG format would get to them. And they corrected me. OGG is, of course, the container. Inside that, you have Vorbis for audio or Theora for video.
We had that backwards.
We had that backwards.
Sorry.
Right. OGG Vorbis is audio. OGG Theora is video. So, and the streams are good. I tend to compress things to OGG Vorbis format. I tend to compress audio to OGG Vorbis format. The Vorbis format for my listening at work because I get better audio quality than MP3s with approximately the same compression. So I really like it better. And as for video, I do watch some Theora stuff, but my eyes aren't good enough to really be able to tell you there's a difference.
Yeah, I've started recording the show in uncompressed AIF to run it through a program called Levelator that they pointed out in the forums that helps with the audio levels.
Right.
And uncompressed, it's about 800 megs.
Yep.
And then when I compress it down into MP3, I get it down to about 45 megs.
Yep.
So it's at a 95% compression because it's only speech. You can compress the heck out of it.
Compress the heck out of it. It doesn't matter because it's only speech. All right, there's no doubt the Android market... Oh, this is going to get some people in an uproar. There's no doubt the Android market will at some point offer more applications for download and or purchase than Apple's App Store, as the App Store's growth has been slowing down of late while the Android application store's growth rate has been accelerating. In a recent report, App Store analytics company Distimo forecasted that Android would surpass the App Store in size before the end of July 2011. Another research firm, Germany-based Research to Guidance, corroborates Distimo's findings. The firm forecasts Android to blow past Apple's App Store by August 2011. Provided current growth rates for new app uploads are maintained, Research to Guidance expects Android market to reach 425,000 apps next August, effectively overtaking App Store in size. According to the firm, Android market adds 28,000 new apps in April 2011, whereas Apple lagged behind with only 11,000 new apps. Of course, there's always the question whether this matters at all. After all, the bulk of applications that are available for both platforms don't see much traction anyway. So how relevant is it that when there are 100,000 apps or 200,000 apps that are rarely, if ever, downloaded by anyone. This, of course, is true for most, if not all, mobile application stores. The short form of that, how many fart apps do you really need? In fact, Android Market's high growth rate does not necessarily mean that the average mobile app developer will have a better shot at generating revenue from the store. In fact, the opposite may be true. All analytics all analysis on the early months of an app store, including the Android Market, shows that average download numbers decrease dramatically after the first months or even weeks after the launch of the store. The long tail gets longer and longer, while the top 5% get richer and richer. But be that as it may, Android Market's stunning growth is worth noting. There's also the fact that Android people expect more stuff for free, whereas Mac people are way more willing to pay for the same thing the Android people get for free. So does size matter in an app store? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Robert did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Robert. What's your question?
Nick, hi. Speaking of iPhones, my wife is ready to get a new phone. Her contract is up, and she's looking at iPhones and she's looking at Androids, and she's almost ready to pull the trigger for an iPhone, but she's concerned about the fact that the iPhones don't support flash video. I'm not familiar with these devices. The question is, what happens when you look at a website or a product that has flash video in it on an iPhone, and is there a plug-in or an app that lets you work around this?
Well, the best sites don't use flash anymore. The problem with flash is it's very power demanding and very processor demanding, and eats your battery up so fast. Most of the tests they've shown between the Android smartphones and the Apple smartphones, and even computers, is that flash drains your computer about 20% faster than not having flash. So most of the websites, since it's been 3 or 4 years now since the phones, the Apple's iPhones have come out not supporting Flash, most of the websites will automatically switch over to HTML5 or H.264 and using other better standards than Flash. Some sites, you'll just get a big broken plugin link if they haven't redesigned their site to work with non-Flash devices.
But it also depends on where you're going to go. So, for example, if you're spending a lot of time at YouTube looking at the older videos that are not in
H.264,
then you might be able to download a YouTube app.
YouTube app comes built into the iOS.
Right.
So the operating system is not blocking these apps.
No, it's
apps.
Just that the iPhone doesn't really do Flash. The Safari doesn't do Flash, really.
Yeah, when you say that, you mean it doesn't natively do it, but once again, you're able to accomplish the same task by getting an app.
Right, Safari is just one app in the system.
Yeah.
And Safari doesn't do Flash, but other applications do.
Yeah, Skyfire is the most popular browser that does support Flash transcoding for the iOS.
Skyfire.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, now, you remember what Steve did say as he was defending Apple. Flash does eat your battery.
I understand.
As would any graphic thing. So if you were to play Angry Birds for 3 or 4 hours, you're going to deplete your battery significantly.
Yeah, well, I don't think she's going to be doing that. But also, you know, when she goes to a site, I don't think she's going to pay any attention to what the file format is of the video behind
that's,
the drapes.
That's the biggest thing we've seen. Average users don't care what Flash is. They don't know what Flash is. They just want the website to work. So what we've seen quite frequently is it was company presidents that got iPhones and iPads and then found out their own website doesn't work and said to their engineers, fix it.
Yeah.
and Adobe themselves have a program called Wallaby that will convert Flash into HTML5. So there's no real reason other than time that websites haven't been converting away from Flash.
Well, there's a lot of places that teach Flash and don't teach HTML5 yet, which is, I think, a disservice to their students.
You can use a 15-year-old technology or you can use a new technology.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So but Flash, so yeah, Flash coming. Has been fine for 15 years. It's now the mobile devices and our the way we use the internet has changed so much that Flash is becoming less relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Also, for those of you who do use Flash in your websites, you should know that Google can't index Flash stuff. So it's as if your website simply does not exist.
And for visually impaired users who are required, or not required, have to use the text alternatives underneath pictures, that if your website just throws up a giant Flash page with nothing under it, you're locking out lots and lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
I'm not a fan of Flash. I tend to block Flash anyway because most ads are in Flash, and I don't really want to see them.
Yeah. There was just an update to Flash this week, the Flash Player 10.3, where they added a user preference panel so that you can control your local stored objects. Most, even casual users now, know about clearing their cache and clearing their cookies. So the advertisers have started using Flash cookies in the local stored object files, so that even if you clear your cookies, those advertisements still stay in your computer because they're stored in the Flash cookie, not the browser cookie. So now enough people have been annoyed by that Adobe came out with a preference panel, so now you can manually clear your browser cookies and your Flash cookies.
Right. Dave, were you making rum balls today?
Dude...
Dave just went to get off his stool.
That's why I put extra cord. I almost felt like, you know, that scene in My Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Yes, yes.
Where she takes off and all of a sudden she's still hooked up to the headset and she gets yanked back.
Yep.
That's what I did.
Nia Vardalos, very funny woman. Very, very funny.
Oh, that was such a good movie. And they did it on the shoestring.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be the biggest.
None of the big studios would fund it.
Yeah, no. So they did it themselves.
I enjoyed her. I understand she's a complete pain to work with, but I enjoyed her in that scene. And of course, John, what's his name, who was the male lead there?
Yeah.
And then I will watch Lainey Kazan do anything, absolutely anything. I love her. Loved her in My Favorite Year. Listen out there, ladies and gentlemen. I know this is a computer show, but I'm going to give you just one word of advice about movies. If you've never seen it before, go out and find it. It's called My Favorite Year, and it may be the best comedy I've ever seen.
One thing I got into was the Netflix.
I love Netflix.
I say, speaking of comedies, the picture you had of your parents on your Facebook page?
Yes.
Is that really your parents, or is that a still from some vaudeville movie?
It really, really. That's my folk.
And it is a still from a vaudeville movie.
Right? It's a little bit of both. My friend Mark Dupre came into our home one day with his camera and went to snap a picture of my parents. My mother, who had been washing those knives, there's two knives in her hands, and they still have suds on them. You can see that there. Stuck it to my father's chest. He grabbed his chest like he was being stabbed.
Really?
And Mark took the picture. It's my favorite picture of them. It just shows them off. A completely spontaneous moment. Lots of fun. Lots of humor. And both of them smiling away. It was really, really, really good picture. That's my favorite of them. Always has been. It's somewhere on my Facebook page now, probably way down.
For Mother's Day.
Yeah, it was for Mother's Day.
That's one thing I regret that, you know, it was lost. My grandparents, my grandfather, I mean, God love him, he's the one that got me into woodworking and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a picture, and like I say, it got lost, but for one Christmas, they got me these boxing gloves and the boxing shorts.
Oh, sure.
And they took a picture with me on him, and my grandfather's down on his knees, and he's got his on, because we used to watch boxing all the time.
Sure.
So he's acting as like I'm punching him, and my grandmother's there as the referee. And they took the picture of that. And I had, you know, it was around for the longest time, but then it got lost.
Yep.
And, you know, I'd give anything to have that picture back. Yep. You know,
well, Mark, God bless him, keeps every photo he's ever taken, some of which we wish he would get rid of. And he sent that to me as a file one day, as a computer file. This guy who you know, he lived in the 1800s, essentially. But then he bought himself a Mac, and doggone it, if he isn't taking, everything's digital now. It's great.
Well, it is, and what they can do with it, too. Matter of fact, with mine, I've got a fifth grade school picture.
Uh-huh.
That I did find that my mother didn't throw out, and it's a little stained. But I was able, through with Photoshop and that, clear that all up, taking the good area and pasting it over and touching it all up, and I got it looking pretty good. And it was like, whoa, you know, this cruddy picture, and now I've got it pretty well cleaned up. And just a habit, you know, I mean, like you say, I don't have a lot of them.
My friend Mary Cardozo posted a couple of kindergarten pictures of us. She was my first girlfriend. We were completely inseparable until at like the age of 5 or 6. Parents moved to Buffalo. I hated the train for years because I you know, in my mind, that was the thing that took her away.
Well, that's the thing. You know, back then, I mean, we'd take pictures, you know, so easy right now and, oh, throw them away. But back then when people took pictures, they had to take it and get it processed and get the prints.
Yep.
You know, and then, you hope you didn't lose the negatives.
Right.
Whereas now, oh, yeah, I got it here. I stored it over on this terabyte hard drive, pull it up, print it. You know, how many copies you want? You know, you can print them yourself for pennies.
Right. But now you got to worry about keeping them protected for future generations. We take so many, and we always intend to back them up.
Yeah.
We intend to do it. But it's all shoulda, coulda, woulda, and we don't back it up. And even when we do back it up, where do we back it up? Luckily, there's places now like Dropbox and a couple of others. Google has storage places, but they don't give you a lot of storage, and pictures take a lot of space.
For free. Yep. They don't give you a lot for free. You can always buy more.
And yet, look at Dave. If he had been able 25 years ago to pay Dropbox $10 a year to store that one picture, would it have been worth it to you?
Oh,
absolutely. But we don't think about that until they're lost.
Yep.
It's really cheap insurance.
It's the shoebox full of pictures in grandma's closet. That no one remembers who any of those people are. So when you do print something out, write their names on it.
Yeah, right.
Well, see, that was the problem. When my mother passed away, they cleaned out. Well, when she moved from her house out to her condo, that's when it got lost. Because there was literally boxes and boxes of, you know, photos and everything else up in the attic. And they were in these other boxes of clothes and all that. And she got some folks to help her throw a lot of stuff out. And this huge dumpster, and that's where it got dumped. So it went to a landfill.
One of the best things you can do is go to any one of these places that does this and take all your old photos, all your old slides, and all your old home movies and get them digitized. Because then you can find better places and better ways and multiple places to store them. I like this music.
Simply Irresistible.
There you go.
Superstition.
Whatever. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes, 20 minutes after the hour on Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, if you have a suggestion for us, keep it to yours. I mean, send it right in. We'd be glad to act on it.
I said it was similar to the last news story about the app stores. I was reading an article this week about book publishers are fighting what they're calling the one-screen problem. So many people have now started using tablets and smartphones as sort of their only reading device. It used to be you'd set aside time to read an actual book. Now they're fighting for time against Angry Birds and email and e-book reading. So
it's very
book reading is dropping even farther.
Google took another swipe at Microsoft on Wednesday when it introduced a new kind of computer called a Chromebook, which stores everything online. Google hopes that the devices, which it says will eliminate the need for software updates and hard drive backups and will boot up within 8 seconds, will replace PCs running Microsoft's Windows software in offices and homes around the world. Whether it be Microsoft or other OS vendors, I think the complexity of managing your computers is really torturing users out there, said Sergey Brin, Google's co-founder and director of special projects, speaking at Google I/O, its developer conference. That's a flawed model fundamentally, and I think Chromebooks are a new model that doesn't put the burden of managing your computer on yourself. Google will not have an easy time challenging Microsoft, which dominates the workplace. While Google has bested Microsoft in operating system software for mobile phones, it has taken on Microsoft in the workplace before and failed to budget, most notably in word processing and spreadsheet software and collaboration tools. Google says Chromebooks will attract corporate technology buyers because Google automatically updates the Chrome operating system over the internet, and there is no need to back up computers because if they are lost or ruined, all the data exists online. We're venturing into a really new model of computing that I don't think was possible previously, even a few years ago, said Mr. Brin. I think it's just a much easier way to compute. Google's biggest challenge will be persuading people to do computing in a completely different way. The Chromebooks, named after Google's Chrome operating system, will store all of a user's data and the computer's software online. Google's idea is that anyone could walk up to an internet-connected computer anywhere and have access to his or her information. But since most computers are accustomed to using desktop software and storing data on a computer's hard drive, getting people and corporate managers of information technology to change will be difficult, said David Daoud, Research Director for Personal Computing at IDC. Large companies are still very much Windows-centric, Mr. Daoud said. Yes, Google might find a niche market for this, or I suppose a niche market for this, but it's going to be very difficult to compete with Microsoft in the large enterprise space given the complexity of those installed products. So our question to you, Chrome OS or traditional software? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
And one of the problems with a computer like that is that you must be connected to the internet to do anything.
Yes.
So they're including a Wi-Fi 3G card so that you get 100 megabytes of free cellular data from Verizon.
Every month.
100 megs free per month. And normally, that's like $20 a month if you have to buy a data plan on some other device.
What's interesting to me is they're cheap enough. They're a few hundred dollars. And that makes it cheap enough to replace netbooks. I don't think it's going to replace most people's desktops. Although, if you have a desktop with the Chrome browser, you've essentially got much of the same thing. And you know, if what you do is store all your documents in Google Docs and you know, all of that stuff, you have your stuff everywhere, but the reality is if I'm going to carry around something, and 90% of the places I go have wireless anyway, right?
Yep.
The only time I would need it, I guess, is if I was in the car.
We've had this discussion with a lot of customers about the iPad, buying the Wi-Fi only version or the Wi-Fi 3G version. Well, I'm almost always someplace with Wi-Fi until you're not.
Right.
And then you wish you'd have bought the 3G version.
Well, but
now smartphones have Wi-Fi hotspot capability, a lot of them, too.
I'm going to tell a tale on my wife out of school because she's not listening because she's at market. We went and picked up my daughter in Rockford, Illinois this week. And both on the way down and on the way back, she was on the computer the whole time because I had a phone that had a hotspot. And, and I don't think
– do you have unlimited data plan?
Yes, I do on that one, yes.
Thank God.
It was really very nice, and it was really very easy, and I think she lost connection once each way in the same spot.
Huh.
You know, so certainly Verizon is right. They cover every place. It was only 3G, so it was not as fast as she would have liked, but, you know, it's not how well the...
Wait a minute, how far we've come in just the past 5 years?
Exactly.
Google has partners with Samsung and Acer for the Chromebooks. You'll be able to order them on June 15th. They are both Atom processors. It's a dual core, but it's an Atom processor.
Who cares?
Right, and because you're not doing much processing power on your local device.
Right.
And we've seen netbooks with Atom processors, and you try to load regular Windows on it, and it's terrible.
It's very slow. On the other hand, this is an Atom processor, and it's running Linux, and it flies.
Yep.
So it depends on what you're going to put on it. And certainly those are Linux-based as well, but... what's nice is it really is just a way to get to the actual stuff on the web. So there's no updating, there's no hard drive, there's no hidden costs, there's no...
And Google updates the OS and the browser automatically in the background, which is both a good and a bad thing,
because
if a bad update comes out, there's trouble. I had a lot of problems with the Chrome 11 update that they pushed recently. Some websites quit working with it.
Mm-hmm.
So in a day or two, a new version of Chrome 11 had come out, but for that day or two, it was annoying.
Yeah, no, I wound up, my lovely sister Sue gave me one of those netbooks, the Triple E.
Oh, yeah, they're nice.
I love it. I bring it here to the studio on Thursday nights because before, you know, I had that laptop. That big laptop, I had that for a while, but then I was without anything, and she gave me this the netbook, and it's great because it's so small, and I bring it in here in the studio and I do my playlist on it. But yet, like you say, I can get to the internet and do the surfing and that. It's just, it's unbelievable. But, you know, again, I store a lot of stuff. I do cloud computing. So if I need a particular file or something, that's no biggie.
Right.
Like I created this one playlist and it's like, oh, shoot, I forgot to print it off and put it on. No problem. I went on the internet up to the cloud, grabbed it. Like you say, because it's virtually you can get connected anywhere, plugged in. I got it.
I save all my stuff on the in the cloud now. Anyway,
yeah. I'm it just Google works Docs perfect.
For everything.
Yeah,
because it doesn't matter where I am, what I'm doing, what I got. I'm never at the wrong machine.
Yeah, no, you could be at a library in Wisconsin,
right?
And need a particular file, pull it down, put it on a flash drive, and away you go.
Yep. Well, now whenever I go to do a talk, you know, I used to have it on my computer. And on a CD. Then I had it on my computer, on a CD, and on a flash drive. Now I've got it on my computer, on a CD, on a flash drive, and on the web.
Yeah, so you're covered.
If they can get to any one of those devices, they connect any one of those devices. Did we do Richard for 100?
No.
Or is he waiting?
He's waiting.
Oh, you hid that behind my monitor. Oh, I'm blaming you. Sorry, Richard. Welcome. What can we do for you?
Wait a minute. Who's in control here?
You are, clearly.
No, I passed it on to you. I put down his name. I put down where he's calling from.
And then you hit it behind my monitor.
Well, you guys have all the wire and junk there. Clean it up a little.
Sorry. Richard, what is your question?
Hi, guys.
Jeez.
Question. The requirement of so many websites for my email address and my password and all of that, even websites that know me that I have bought stuff from for years is driving me nuts. I have a 3-inch thick notebook with all my passwords for all of these websites. Somebody told me that a thumb drive is a way for me to store individual passwords for all of these passwords that I need for various websites.
You can store them in a file on a thumb drive. So
yeah,
you always
just
have
do it like a spreadsheet.
Is there a better way, or is that the best way? And
there are.
So I have a 1 gigabyte thumb drive in front of me. How do I do that?
Just make a new text file and.
Well, I don't
and,
even.
And call
I do it,
well,
in a spreadsheet.
Well, you can do it in a spreadsheet. You know, Amazon username, password. You know, Barnes & Noble username, password. There are password management programs that do all this managing for you, and then they will save a password file that has all this data in it. And then people like to put that on Dropbox or in the cloud or on a flash drive, so wherever they go on whatever computer they use, they can access their files.
Whatever you use, make sure that that file is encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you lose that thumb drive, somebody's got your identity.
Well,
because invariably you're going to keep your credit card information in there and your password to your bank and your PIN number and all that other stuff, and they're going to have your identity, even if they can only be you on Facebook. How damaging can that be to you?
So this little thumb drive would be sitting in my room where my laptop would be. So I would stick the thumb drive in the computer when I'm ready to access it?
Yes.
And then you open that file that has your passwords in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be a plain file, and my suggestion is at least password protect it, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So I would then set that up. How would the computer know that particular password?
It wouldn't.
How would I do that?
So you open that file and you look and see what password you need for what website you're logging into.
It's just a text file or an Excel spreadsheet.
You'll
be reading it yourself.
Which is why it's a lot easier to use a password management program. We've talked in the past about LastPass and 1Password and
RoboForm
and KeePass. There are several different password management programs that will store and remember all those passwords for you, and they tie into the website. So you go to the Amazon website, and LastPass is running on your computer, and it says, oh, you're at Amazon, and it fills in the username and password for you.
I see. So give me one LastPass, it's called?
Yeah, LastPass is one. 1Password is good. Also, RoboForm is good. Most of them will fill out forms on websites as well, so it remembers that form information too.
Okay, in conjunction with my little thumb drive.
You can save your password database on your thumb drive if you like.
In fact, it's very important to back up that file in case you ever lose it.
I see.
Backing it up onto that thumb drive every time it changes is probably your best.
Yeah, because in case your hard drive crashes, you know, you'd have to reinstall. Say you get that RoboForm, and you put that on there, and you're but you're backing up all the passwords to the thumb drive, and your hard drive crashes. Oh, great. Now you reload all your software, and it's like, what was the password for that one? Oh, yep. Well, all you'd have to do is reload RoboForm, and it's the same for the other programs. Say import your list, and then bam, there's all your passwords back in there.
And people that have multiple devices, like a desktop and a laptop or a smartphone and tablet, will use these programs usually in conjunction with something like Dropbox, and they'll put their password database on Dropbox. And so whatever computer they're on, all of their passwords are available to that computer.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in line at a store on your smartphone, and you decide you want to buy something on Amazon. Your passwords are available to that smartphone as well.
I see. Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Have a good day.
You too.
Yeah, at a very basic, people will write down a list of all their usernames and passwords, but then you want to encrypt that list just in case someone else gets to it.
I use KeePass X, and I keep the file in Ubuntu One, which is a type of Dropbox. So it's available to everything, and I move it over to my phone every time I change something. I've got that stuff everywhere.
I got the RoboForm.
Yeah, the Mac has their keychain program built in, so it will remember website passwords and file server passwords for you. Yep. You just have to remember your main administrator passwords. So that's sort of the key thing. You pick one password you know you can remember, and that's the password that you store all your other passwords under.
See, the thing of it I did it in a spreadsheet. I created all the passwords that I need for my banking and everything else. When I went to create it and save it, I didn't even save it on my hard drive. I threw it right to this flash drive. And then that flash drive, over time, I burn it to a rewritable CD. Once a month. So I've got all this other important files that I also have on that flash drive backed up, not only to the flash drive, which sits in a desk drawer. So if anybody hacks into my computer, they're not going to get at my passwords because it never existed on that hard drive. So they can look until the cows come home and never find it. You know, it's just a safe way. Another side plug, and I know this is totally off tangent, but I got to mention it, which because I'm pretty proud. My brother has his son who is serving his third tour in Afghanistan right now. He's done two other tours. But the great town of Spencerport is putting up these posters, like on the various lampposts, you know, they're hanging up these flyers. And my nephew is Sergeant Ryan Enright. In fact, I think it's going to be Staff Sergeant Ryan Enright, is now one of those that's being displayed as serving his country there in the town of Spencerport.
Nice.
So, you know, I thank him. I talk to him quite a bit, you know, and text him back and forth because he is over in Afghanistan. And that's where one thing I got it, you know, we've been talking about Skype. Skype has been one of the biggest tools, and this is not just for my nephew, but a lot of servicemen that are over serving our country, putting their lives on the line. Skype and this tool, because it's free, has, you know, made that bond, you know, and that separation of the military folks and their families at home so much easier to deal with.
Yep.
Because, like, my nephew has got his wife in Texas and a little daughter. He literally got home at Christmas time just to see her be born, and he missed that, was able to see her for a few days, and then had to turn off and go back to Afghanistan. But through Skype and the cameras and being able to chat, they can stay connected. And this is true with all of our military men that have laptops and everything else. They don't have to worry about, oh, I got to get some time on, you know, the phone. If they've got a laptop, they put Skype on it, and their families back at home are on Skype, and they can actually see each other. And I think that's reducing the stress and tension over there for our men and women that are serving our countries, being able to stay in touch with their family members at home.
That's very nice. That's actually kind of beautiful.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I mean, can't say enough about it.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. This is a
nice little riff there, Dave.
Thank you. No, that's another guy. This is another guy. Matter of fact, I got to see him in concert at the Water Street Music Hall. His name is Victor Wooten, and he's one of three great bass players that I know of. Their show was unbelievable, and I've gotten hooked on him. There's a group called SMV. It's Stanley Clark, Marcus Miller, and Victor Wooten. And three of them did a show here. And as a matter of fact, Victor Wooten will be back here at the Jazz Fest. If you want to catch him, coming, it starts June 10th to the 18th. And you can check the Jazz 90.1 webpage for a lot of the great stuff that's coming up at the Jazz Fest. I'll be up there most of the week. We're going to be broadcasting from there. So, you know, please, if you get a chance, stop on by and say hello. But, yeah,
And don't forget Art Loves Jazz.
Yes, that's going to be this coming Thursday. There are still tickets available. So if you get a chance, please. That's going to be at Artisan's Works. And that's going to be going on from 6:30 to 9:30. And it's on Blossom Road. It's a really crazy looking place. There's over 20,000 square feet of art gallery and special events that you're going to be able to look at. There's going to be silent auctions. There's two bands that are going to be playing, a lot of great food, all for $30. So if you want to still get in on it, like I say, there are some tickets left. It's this coming Thursday. You know, give the station a call, and they'll be glad to set it up so you can get tickets, and it's going to be a great time, something you definitely don't want to miss.
In the meantime, indignation spread throughout the Twitter sphere when it was discovered that popular photo-sharing service TwitPic was seemingly forbidding users from selling or distributing their own pictures. But TwitPic was not alone. Other photo services also exercised surprising controls over pictures uploaded by users, and most sites claimed the right to use or distribute pictures without consent. The news agency WENN just signed a deal with TwitPic to purchase celebrity photos uploaded to the site. Other web-based photo hubs are taking a similar approach. Photo-sharing apps including Color, YFrog, Instagram, Flickr, and Lockers have terms of service that resemble TwitPic's. In fact, some are harsher than TwitPic's. Lockers' terms of service states that the company owns or licenses your content outright. The only exception seems to be Moby Picture, but that is not the standard. While some users may not mind if photo-sharing services they use are reproducing their images or selling them for a profit, it's likely more will care that some services retain copyrights to their pictures. Having the copyright to these pictures means the sites have an exclusive right to reproduce, distribute, perform, display, or license the images for their own profit. As several of these sites, Instagram in addition to TwitPic, have changed their terms of service in response to user anger, it's completely possible that others too are willing to bend. Happy to discover you don't own your photos anymore? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. That's 1-800-790-0415.
And what's almost worse is that even if you retain ownership and retain copyright, it's so easy for someone to just lift it off the website.
Right.
So it's, in fact, there was a case a couple years ago, way roundabout, but a family on vacation in Australia saw a poster for an Australian telephone company basically saying, don't be lame like this person, get our phone. And the picture was someone they knew back in Oklahoma or something like that. And it was a picture taken at a mall and posted on Flickr. And the photographer apparently didn't put enough rights descriptions on the picture.
You can't. On Flickr, if you use the service, they own your pictures.
He had a attribution tag, but he forgot to put non-commercial. So if you use the Creative Commons licensing on it, so they attributed the photographer, but used it for a commercial purpose because he forgot non-commercial on it. And it turned out that the girl in the picture was under 18, fully clothed, but she was a minor. So the photographer should have gotten parental permission to take the picture to begin with. So it's made this huge mess to begin with. So it's been an issue for quite a while, and it goes back to what we've been saying for years. Anything you put on the internet can be used by anybody anywhere.
Right. It shouldn't be a surprise to you that when you clicked through the agreement to any one of these services, you were agreeing that they own your picture.
Yep.
And you gave up all rights to it.
You are there
are the club calendar highlights for Saturday.
Thank you so much.
Next hour. There are commercial service, stock photography companies, sure, where you can sell your picture to them, and if someone buys it, then you get paid. And I know a lot of amateur and commercial artists that are using that service and,
right,
and making a nice little income in the background.
Right, but that's very different from just uploading it to TwitPic,
yep,
and having them own it. So be very careful next time you do that, because you don't own what you post. Interesting little problem there.
I'm reading through the Yahoo Terms of Service for Flickr, and it's very vague. Is that it says you can't sell any Yahoo service. Well, if you've put your picture on a Yahoo service, that means you can't sell it.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's very vague about that. I'm sure they meant to say that you can't take Yahoo's services and resell them for your own gain.
I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure they purposely mean that they own your stuff. I mean, that's the easiest way to get new content, is let other people upload it for you, and then you own it.
Yep.
And you know what? The reality is, you take them to court, they're going to say, well, you clicked okay here.
Yeah.
Well, but I didn't read it. Well, then you're an idiot. I'm sorry, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. And they're trying to protect themselves, too, against someone claiming copyright infringement. So if you take someone else's picture and upload it as your own, they don't want to be sued for it.
Right. That's exactly right. So
everyone should go watch the South Park episode, Human Centipede, to see what happens when you don't read your agreements.
Okay, thanks. I'll rush right out and do that.
And half the joke in the whole episode was everyone was incredulous that Kyle didn't read the agreement. What do you mean you don't read? Of course you read the agreements. What do you mean you didn't read the agreement?
You are supposed to read the agreement. I don't know. I don't know. I don't.
Well, it's
don't
just
know.
Like a lot of, nobody. I'll say, yeah. Excuse me. Over 75% of the folks, when they're installing software or installing stuff, you know, off the web onto the machine, do not take the time to even partially read the agreement they're signing up for.
Or they read it once, and then if they reinstall the software, upgrade the software, and it brings them to that point again, they just click through and don't reread it to see what changed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, of course, none of it's in common language, even if you think you understood it, just the way Steve was just saying.
No.
Even if you think you understood it, doesn't mean a thing. You may not have understood a single word that was written there.
Not even a clue.
So.
Yeah, and some of them, you know, like you say, even though you've read it one time, like you turn around, you know, and if it's been a few years, the whole agreement could have changed drastically.
That's exactly right. It's like the old Western Union.
Yeah.
Agreement, which started here in Rochester, of course. Everybody used to say, oh, Western Union will always get your telegram there, always. If you really read the agreement on the back, it said that they might make up to one attempt, you know, if they felt like it. Basically, it's kind of what it boiled down to if you got through the legalese. Yeah, I mean, they almost always did.
You know, that's
but
one thing I remember.
They couldn't be sued if they didn't, because you agreed to what was on the back.
That's funny, because I remember, and again, you know, some folks have sat there and said, how do you remember this stuff? There's times in my life, and I don't know why, but I remember snippets.
Yeah, folks, he doesn't remember what he had for breakfast, but he does remember something that happened 30 years
but
ago.
But I could, 30, try, you know, 60 years
yesterday.
Ago. No, six, easily, you know,
yesterday's
some.
Folks.
Easily some 60 years ago, but I remember one incident. Again, I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, and I remember going to the door and for my mom, opening the door, and it was a telegram.
Uh-huh.
And it was a telegram from her grandmother up in Ogdensburg. And it was for me to go on up there because they were talking back and forth, but she sent a telegram and let me know to pick up the tickets and that because I was going up to Ogdensburg for the summer. And went up there. But I can remember the telegram. And it's like, whoa. The only time, probably more other times, but just that one time I remember it.
The New York and Mississippi Valley Printing Telegraph Company in 1851.
Sure.
Reorganized themselves as the New York and Western Union Telegraph Company.
Mm-hmm.
In 1855. And eventually got shortened down to just Western Union. Because we're all pretty lazy.
Well, the thing that is, though, and people don't realize
they did try to make an Eastern Union with the Russian-American Telegraph when they started linking Alaska to Russia.
I'm sure that went well.
But that's the thing, though, and folks might not know about it, but the Mount Hope Cemetery gives tours. And throughout the summer and that, and there's some really great tours. You know, besides famous people, there's a lot of famous inventors that if you take that tour, it's well worth it. The folks dress up, you know, and they really know their stuff. If you haven't checked it out, try checking it out, because Rochester has a lot of great history that you wouldn't even comprehend that it was even there. You go, huh? Really?
This was interesting. Western Union was a telephone company to begin with until they lost a patent lawsuit with Bell.
Yep.
And got out of the telephone business and stuck to the money transporting business.
People laugh when I say Rochester, New York is the hub of civilization in the Western world, but we invented everything. The car, the patent for the automobile is from Rochester, New York. The mail chute, the Jell-O is, of course, actually from
Leroy.
The marshmallow, the machine gun, the air conditioner, photographs, xerography, name it. And it came from Rochester. We had a million things. The whole idea of franchising was created right here in Rochester, New York, by, I think, Matilda Hopper was her name. For Pete's sake, Western Union was created in Rochester, New York.
Ezra Cornell and Hiram Sibley of Cornell of Cornell University.
Exactly. Yep. He started here in Rochester.
Yep.
Exactly. So we're a pretty amazing town, you know. Everybody, and of course, Sound Bites started here, as did Jazz 90.1. So in many ways, this is a match made in heaven. Well, we've managed to waste 2 hours of each other's lives here. Thank you very much. And so we're done. We're done now for another week. We're going to take our city pride and go home. But you get to stay here because George is coming in with a couple hours of German music. He's phenomenal at that. Linda keeps him in line, so it won't get too wild in here. But we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We will see you next week right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1.